The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
My name is Elbert Lewis, Jr.
And I'm Alan McIntyre. And together we welcome you back to our show, Black on Black Commentary. And the intended audience for our show is the black community, yet others are encouraged and welcome to tune in. Each and every one of us has a unique bias when it comes to change or certain subjects. And I should warn you that the content of our program episodes is probably unlike anything you've heard coming out of the black community.
Again, I'd like to welcome you back and encourage you to keep an open mind and think for yourself. If you're not African American, we hope you'll listen in to our show as well. Our program is intended to educate our listeners and provoke serious thought. Each of our episodes will deal with a different topic of importance. Are you ready for some open and honest black on black commentary? Great, because it's time we talked. You know, Alan, the last time we talked, we touched on a subject of the genesis of African-American political allegiances. After I thought about that, I thought back to my own evolution in politics. As a young man, I was totally apolitical. I had no political allegiances. I felt that, you know, coming up through the civil rights era, you know, be all you can be, black pride, that if you do everything you possibly can to overcome racism, do as few self-destructive things as possible, you can make it in America. And so I felt no need to vote Republican or Democrat until Jimmy Carter came along and that Iranian hostage, embassy hostage episode. And I felt that he was just so weak as a president that I had to do something. And I started voting, and I voted Republican for Ronald Reagan, which was basically an anti-Carter vote. But after that, I started paying attention. I started reading, and I found that basically the Republican philosophy was more in line with my own personal beliefs. And I typically voted about 70-30 Republican in every election since then, with the exception of the Obama election. Now, after looking at that movie, Runaway Slave, I have even more information. And one thing I didn't understand was that the Republican Party started in 1854 as an anti-slavery political party, and it grew from that. So how in the world could a party that started to end slavery or to restrict slavery from the Western territories end up in 2013 being so reviled by the black community? That simply doesn't make sense to me.
Propaganda. It's really that simple. The left is good at propaganda, and that's what has gotten black people to shift away from the Republican Party to the Democrat Party. You talked about Jimmy Carter, and you talked about how you really didn't feel it necessary to affiliate with a particular political party because you saw America as a place where if you just got out and did what you needed to do, there was plenty of opportunity for you to succeed.
Absolutely.
And nowadays, you see the black community in particular tying success to a particular party. Mm-hmm. And that's because they have become dependent upon the Democrat Party. But it's obvious if you look around that the Democrat Party hasn't been very successful at making the black community successful. So it's time that the black community takes a second look at their party affiliation. As a matter of fact, if you look at out here right now today, well, look underneath Obama. Many, many more people on welfare and dependent upon some type of entitlement. Look at the unemployment rate. Look at everything's falling apart. And that's a result of Democrat Party politics. So it's time that we really reassess the Democrat Party and see if they're worthy of our vote. And also I'd like to throw out there, I'm very angry at the fact that the Democrat Party is equating the homosexual movement with the civil rights movement. That right there, I think, is an example of the Democrat Party smacking the black community dead square in the face.
Well, but that's, the gay rights movement is not the only movement that's sort of made that analogy. You know, just about every civil rights group on the planet or in this country, when they state their case, they'll cite the civil rights movement as the prototype or the reason why. And it's almost like saying, if you can't discriminate against black people, you can't discriminate against anybody. When I hear that, I sort of get kind of aggravated because they're saying, like, black people are the most worthy of being discriminated against. You can't discriminate against them, so you certainly can't discriminate against us. But when you look at the history of the Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln, the president who basically started the process to end slavery, Republican.
Yes.
And the Republican Party championed most of the landmark constitutional amendments, the 13th Amendment, 1865, which made slavery illegal under Lincoln. The 14th Amendment granted ex-slave citizenship in 1868, basically was pushed through the government by the Republican Party. 1870, the 15th Amendment, which granted ex-slaves the right to vote. So historically, the foundation of civil rights in this country for African Americans was established by the Republican Party. I don't understand why, number one, the school system, public school system doesn't teach that, and number two, why the Republican Party doesn't toot their own horn, because I pay attention to the news, and you don't hear any of this coming out of the Republican Party, and I'm just curious why.
Well, let me just say that it's a grave mistake, obviously, for them not to do that, and you see where it's gotten us.
Right. If the Democrats are the propagandists, this would be an effective counter-argument to what they're saying.
Well, what you're saying leads me good. You know, this is great because it leads me into what I can talk about what I'm doing. And we're going to be doing that today. That's going door-to-door, distributing information, distributing the truth. To some degree, you can say that I'm kind of going out here blowing the Republican Party's horn for them. Because in this particular pamphlet that I'm holding here that we're going to be distributing, there's a page titled Republican versus Democrat, a Historical Perspective. And it brings you from the early 1800s, well, the mid-1800s, all the way to present, basically, describing to you, for you, exactly what the Republican Party versus the Democrat Party has done. The Democrat Party has given us nothing, absolutely nothing, but slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and Jim Crow, and entitlements. That's where they've taken us. And we have to do something about it. And I figured out a long time ago that I could no longer sit around and depend on politicians to be my voice, depend on anybody to be my voice. I literally said I've got to create a document or documents, if you will, with nothing but the truth in them, but distribute that to individuals right to where they live, work, play, or whatever. And so I keep them with me. I hand them out randomly. I'll ship them out to organizations that want to distribute them in their area. But, the Democrat Party has really undermined the black community by all means.
In my formative years and early adult years, I never really associated, you know, the Klan or segregationists to any particular party. They was just racist white people. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the history of the segregationists and the states' rights people in the South, they were basically all Democrats. And so I don't understand why the Republican Party doesn't use this fact, this information, this historical fact to state their case. I kind of understand why some black people sort of attach themselves to the Democratic Party because they are the party of the freebies, you know, the social services, safety net, if you please. But if you are a free-thinking, if you are an independent black person, I don't understand why you would gravitate towards a party or a group of people who advocate dependency. And that's basically what the Democratic Party has come down to. They're advocating programs and policies that, for the most part, promote dependency.
Well, you mentioned states' rights. And I'm all in favor of states' rights. I think the states they need to be able to maintain their rights. I don't like the idea of the federal government really usurping power over the states, because ultimately you are usurping power over the people,
unless they violate the Constitution.
Right, right. And but let me say this: states' rights in the past, during the Jim Crow era, Democrats championed that as a means by which to oppress a particular group of people. Now, the Tea Party, for example, may champion states' rights as a means by which to prevent the federal government from usurping too much power and authority over the people in the states. We're in a situation now where Obama is determined to really overlook the Constitution, and he's really looking to operate outside of the Constitution and above the Constitution. This morning, I was listening to the radio, and I heard some comments that Obama made with regards to going on ahead and doing some things regardless of what the Congress was doing and what the Constitution said. And that really scared me, because that's telling me, you know, he's subject to do anything. He believes that he can do whatever he wants to do. That is very scary. He's just one individual.
Yeah, but that's in the nature of the position. I can think of, I should say, when I think of almost any president in my lifetime, they've always had attitudes that they were the president, and if they wish this or that to happen, that they it was in their capacity. But they always
I don't think to the extreme. I think Obama is very extreme. As a matter of fact, it's actually two different things from my experience. I think that Obama, because we are very familiar with his history, who his mentors were, what he was taught to believe, you know, his ideological upbringing. I think it's very clear and evident with Obama that it goes beyond, you know, what you're referring to.
Because
he said he wants to fundamentally transform America.
Right, but there's no doubt he wants to move this country towards a socialist, a more socialist type government, as I guess in the model of some European countries.
I think even more so.
Yeah, but that being said, a president has a lot of prestige and a lot of power when it comes to the military. But when it comes to actual public policy and what happens in this country, his power is more the bully pulpit. Congress, and especially the House of Representatives, that's where the real power is. That's where the purse strings are. Take for instance, Obamacare. If the Republicans, especially the RINOs, weren't as spineless as they are,
they could defund it.
They could defund Obamacare, and it would be defunct today. It would be history. But they don't do that. And so instead, they choose to debate endlessly or to criticize endlessly what he's doing when they have the power of the purse and can at any minute end his so-called march towards socialism.
John Boehner, he's the one that can do something about that.
Correct.
What is he doing? Nothing.
Well, I did mention spineless Republicans.
Okay, well, exactly. And we, first and foremost, we need to get rid of Boehner. I think he's like the rhino in chief as far as I'm concerned. I think he's a big reason why Obama has been able to do what he has done. He hasn't really put up any fight against Obama. Every now and then he comes out and he talks tough. But what is tough talking if there's no action to follow it?
I see it this way. Obama really hasn't put together a tight coalition of Democratic congressmen, because there have been votes in the Senate, which supposedly Democrats control, that have not been overwhelmingly in support of Obama's policies. So if the Republicans ever got together and showed unity, there would be a lot of conservative Democrats that would feel comfortable in joining them, and they could stop a lot of this stuff. But I just feel that a lot is being made of Obama's attitudes towards socialist leanings and where he wants this country to go. But my reading of the Constitution and the way the government works is that he's very limited in what he can do beyond influencing people in his own party and maybe a few people outside of his own party. But the Congress, that's where the real power is.
Well, in theory, that is where the real power is. But unfortunately, during this administration, it's not. Because Obama has been very successful enforcing his will in this country. I'll give you a classic example. Let's look at Obamacare. You can call him a figurehead or whatever you want to call him, but Obamacare passed, and it went against the will of the people. The majority of Americans didn't want it.
But there had to be several Republican congressmen
No, at the time they controlled the House and the Senate. The Democrats did. That's how it got through. That's how it got passed.
Okay, I got to go back and look at that.
Well, here's the thing. There were many, I would argue that there were many Democrats that supported Obamacare that in their heart they didn't. But they did it because of pressure from Obama to support it. You know that happened.
Yes. Well, Obamacare is a reality, so I imagine right. There was a lot of horse trading involved.
I think this kind of horse trading has gone on for decades across both parties.
Absolutely. That's national politics. I understand that. You know, you got to give something to get something, and that's the way the government works.
I guess the objective is to give very little to get something. That would be my objective if I was.
Right. Well, but again, how does all this play in African-American political allegiances? Because, like you said, the plight of black people hasn't improved since we had a black president. So where does this allegiance, why is it still 90-some percent solid with the Democrats?
Because the Democrats had a very solid plan on how to acquire the black community's allegiance. Let's say that. And that plan, which we've talked about before, and I'm going to read here in just a second. Let me read this quote from Lyndon Baines Johnson. "These Negroes, they're getting pretty uppity these days. And that's a problem for us since they've got something now they never had before. The political pull to back up their uppityness. Now we've got to do something about this. We've got to give them a little something, just enough to quiet them down, not enough to make a difference." That's the answer to your question. That last sentence, that is the absolute answer to your question. They decided to give us a little something for our allegiance, and we were perfectly fine going along with it. And they do give us a little something.
That kind of makes sense to me, because instead of dealing with the real problem, which was discrimination, they chose to come forth with the social assistance programs. Yeah, you can't get a job because of discrimination, but we'll give you welfare so you can eat. You got a roof over your head. We even give you medical care. Just don't ask us to go after the real problem, which is
right.
Part of the segment of the white population, which was discriminated against black people.
Here's my thing. What good is any entitlement if, and I'm just using some examples, because the problem is far beyond entitlements and handouts and welfare. What good is welfare if a single mother is on drugs and spends the money on drugs? Does it solve the problem of the kid being hungry? But well, that's why they're giving them. That's why they get the welfare, to feed the kids.
Right.
But what if she's on drugs and she's spending the money on drugs? They get the welfare. So according to the government, according to liberals, they're doing such a good thing. But guess what? If we follow it back and check it out, the money's not really going where it should be going. Therefore, it's not taking care of its intended purpose. So guess what? You may feel good. These liberals, they feel so good. Oh, I've been able to give them this and give them that. Yeah, but go look at the back end of it and see what really happens. Is it used how it should be used? I get so sick and tired of liberals talking about what they're going to do and what they've done. Obviously, there's something wrong with your method, because the communities are getting worse.
Absolutely.
That's the reason why I don't give a damn about it. I hate entitlements. As a matter of fact, the only way I condone entitlements is with strings attached. And those strings attached should be, let's give you a drug test. Let's test you every time you come in. As a matter of fact, make it to where they have to go pick up their check.
I can agree with that.
Let's drug test them. Okay, let's send somebody by, a social worker, somebody. Let's go by and check on the household. Okay, and I need to see that you are actively seeking employment. And check this out. You're not going to keep coming to me showing me that you're actively seeking employment, and then you just continue to get these entitlements, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, you still haven't been employed. Because the way I would set it up is, during a certain period of time, you would have to have been employed either part-time or full-time in order to continue to receive these benefits. And if you're employed part-time, well, we'll continue to give you benefits, not the whole benefit, a partial benefit. But so you've got to make it uncomfortable to be poor. Hold on, follow me. Yeah. I want to make it very uncomfortable to be poor.
I agree with that.
Because if I do that,
we're going to
create an incentive not to be dependent upon entitlements.
But what you're saying would butt up against, in a very violent way, the Civil Rights Act, 1964, and any subsequent legislation where minorities or poor people can be treated differently. Wasn't that the goal of the Civil Rights Act?
Wait, you say treated differently?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So you're saying that what I just prescribed is somehow treating them differently and therefore discriminating?
Correct. Because
okay, so who are we discriminating against when we give them entitlements? See, that everything that I look at everything on the flip side. If I give you something and I don't give him something, I'm discriminating against him. As a matter of fact, I'm using his money to provide yeah. you with something. So that's a sort of discrimination as well. Why go back and forth and heckle back and forth about who's being discriminated against and whatnot? Look, let's create a system that works. And if it seems a little unfair, so be it. Get the hell off of it.
But I would approach it differently. I don't want to be, or our government to be put in a position where they're acting like someone's father.
We're already doing that.
That's the point. This is what I would do if I were king.
So let's be more efficient fathers.
No, if I were king and everybody is entitled to one mistake, you may not know.
Multiple mistakes.
No, in my book.
In your kingdom.
And so if you get pregnant, if you do something and wind up in prison or whatever else, and you have to take advantage of public assistance, you have one opportunity and maybe a 5-year span when it comes to children. And maybe you do need help from the government. Maybe you do need assistance feeding them and clothing
them. Which I'm fine with.
Right. And you would be, in my world, you would be eligible for that 5-year span. But after that, the spigot is off, and you're on your own.
Let me say this real quick.
And therefore,
and maybe you'll like this.
The onus is on the individual.
Well, here's the thing. At the very least, if people are dependent upon entitlements, whatever it may be, and you're receiving those on a regular basis, there are a lot of government services out here that the government provides a lot of services. Why can't you take these people and put them in those positions working and providing those services? For example, the highways are dirty. Drive them down the highways, and you see where people sponsor a highway. Mm-hmm. Cut that program out. Now it's going to be sponsored by, it's going to be the responsibility of people that are receiving benefits from the government. Okay? We got a lot of potholes. If you want your government check, hold on, I'm just giving an example. If you want your monthly check, guess what? You have to invest so many hours out here serving the community, either cleaning the highways, filling potholes. It could be whatever they want to come up
but
with.
But that was the case in some states.
Provided,
but you know what happened? The unions objected to it.
Well, see, now we're getting on something else down the unions.
Well, because that was taking jobs away from union members.
Well, right now, union members aren't cleaning the highways. Granted, though, the people that are filling the potholes probably do belong to a union. Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, they do.
And the public unions.
But you know what? Check this out. What it boils down to is the union versus the country. What's in the best interest of the country? And you know what? The union has to take a back seat to the country. We have to do what's going to help this country save money and help this country to reduce a dependent class. And as you reduce a dependent class, you're going to save the country. The fact that we have such a large dependent class is the reason why people are so willingly and openly accepting this movement towards socialism.
Yeah, but the other, correct. And the essential aspect of that is the open-endedness of those benefits.
Exactly.
There has to be a sunset clause to benefits.
Real quick, let me throw this in, because you said open-ended, and that's what we do. We take that open-endedness away. If I have you out here cleaning the highways or filling potholes or whatever for this small amount of money, at some point in time it's going to trigger in your head, hold on, this is very labor-intensive. It's hot out here. I'm thirsty. I bet if I went and got a job somewhere else making more money, I would do a lot less labor.
Right. And might be working inside in the air conditioning.
Exactly. There's a lot of ways to look at this thing. It's not very difficult to figure this out. It's just that people are unwilling to do this. People are unwilling to make this call and say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and do this because they're afraid of what they're going to be called racist. They're going to be called evil this, evil that. We got to get beyond that. We got to stop being afraid of being called something.
Correct. I agree with that. Yeah, this thing you mentioned about unions, that's a whole nother can of worms. And I think we could spend a segment or two on that, on how the unions, especially the public unions, have sort of contributed to a lot of problems in inner city. Detroit comes to mind. They recently filed bankruptcy, and a big part of that was the outrageous wages and benefits that were bargained for by the unions. So I see unions as another extension of the problem in the black community, and especially the public unions.
I agree with you.
Give us some thought, and together, perhaps we can all ensure our country's future history and have it be something we could be proud of.